People move for lots of reasons. ICMC moves with them. That's the logo of the International Catholic Migration Commission, and it leaps to your eyes as soon as you open its website. Further on, the homepage explains that the ICMC serves and protects the needs of uprooted people, refugees, internally displaced persons and migrants, with operations in 30 countries of the world. It advocates for durable solutions and rights-based policies directly and through a worldwide network of member organisations. ICMC's president, John Klink, was just recently in Rome for a meeting. He took time to come into Vatican Radio for a chat with my colleague Irene Lagan. He told her that the organisation goes back quite a few years. In fact, it was founded in 1951 by Pope Pius XII.
You can actually read about our founding in an apostolic constitution, which is the highest form of papal document, called Exul Familia Nazaritana, which is called the Exiled Family of Nazareth. And in it, the Holy Father describes the reasons why ICMC was founded, which is to deal with the refugees. And at that point, it was the onslaught of refugees throughout Europe, from Europe. So it was an inter-Europe question. And the Apostolic Constitution describes how the Holy Father gave instructions, for instance, for the Church to open the doors of all of the convents, all of the monasteries, even the Vatican and Castel Sant'Angelo, to take in refugee families. So I think that's very indicative of the concern and openness of the Church for the issue of migration.
And John points out it also has a very theological focus.
When you consider that the exiled family of Nazareth, that is the Holy Family, and not only was Christ made man, but immediately upon being made man, he was made into a refugee. And within the first, presumably the first days or weeks of his birth. And St. Joseph, therefore, took on the mantle of the archetype of all refugee families, because as the story is clearly recounted in the Bible, he was woken up in the middle of the night by the angel and told to get up and grab his family and leave in the middle of the night immediately. And he did. And he did not wait until daybreak, and he just grabbed them and left because they were in danger. And I think that's very clearly the issue of so many and the plight of so many refugees that suddenly find their life turned upside down.
So taking it from there, Pope Pius XII, at the behest of his pro-Secretary of State at the time, Cardinal Montini, the man who was later to become Pope Paul VI, and of Cardinal Frings of Cologne, co-founded ICMC. They wanted it to be located in Geneva, so it would be able to give a Catholic and Christian perspective at the Table of Nations, when they were discussing the needs of refugees and migrants, because, of course, Geneva is where a lot of United Nations activities take place.
In the early days, the work consisted primarily of giving loans to refugee families in order to either go to another country or to come back home, if that was a possibility for them. And then subsequently, with major developments such as the war in Vietnam, the major focus became resettling refugees during the war and after the war. And so ICMC has resettled over 1 million refugees in the United States alone.
So from about 1952 to the present day, he pointed out, it has taken care of over 1 million refugees. And today there is much to be done.
If you look at the overall figures, there's 200 million migrants. There's about 14 million refugees and 27 million trafficked peoples as an estimate. So it's not that we're wondering what to do every day.
Now, you mentioned this issue of refugees. So this problem really has increased over the years, obviously. And is this a renewed emphasis that the Holy See is placing on the work of the Commission?
It is. Because of this increase and because of we're in a globalized world, and it is the Church's teaching that people should be allowed to find a better life. But also it's the teaching that the best thing of all is for people to have the right to remain where they are and not have to leave. And so that brings in the whole issue of development and overall justice issues. And so, however, bearing in mind that that's the best, one has to deal with the realities that one is dealt. And so the realities are that there are still extraordinary large numbers of refugees. And one of the major problems is, in terms of migrants, first of all, the best thing is to have them protected at home. But if they are overseas, then to make sure that somehow they are taken care of and that they have a real chance of inculcating themselves into society, inserting themselves into society in a very profitable and mutually satisfactory way. Because it's very clear that Western societies in the United States, which has an extraordinary history of migration, and now in Europe also, that Europeans need many of these people to help them in their economies. And the major focus that ICMC wants to be sure of is that people are not used simply as tools, but that they are treated with complete respect, as is due them, as part of Catholic social teaching, that the most important thing is the human dignity of the person. And as a result of that, that also applies to them being able to have their families and not be separated from their families for extended periods of time.
Now, how do you collaborate on the one side with UNHCR and on the other side with the Holy See, say the Pontifical Council for Migration? And do you collaborate also with other, say, NGOs outside of those two main bodies?
We collaborate with just about everyone. United Nations High Commission for Refugees is located in Geneva, and so we've had a collaborative relationship with them ever since our founding. And one of the things that we do is provide also personnel for deployment in particular refugee situations in order that the refugees can be documented and processed as quickly as possible. And so we currently have the deployment of personnel in 20 countries. And we have programs, actual humanitarian programs, in 7 countries. In terms of how we collaborate with the Holy See, our statutes, which were just recently approved by the decree from the Secretary of State, clearly spell out that we are to collaborate with the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant Peoples, which is headed by Cardinal Renato Martino, and also with the second section of the Secretariat of State, which is the Foreign Ministry of the Vatican. And because of the extraordinary importance that the Holy See attaches to migration issues, they want to be sure that the expertise is at their beck and call. And so our Secretary General in particular helps out. And in terms of how we collaborate with other NGOs, we are a member of many associations of NGOs. And our Secretary General is also the chair of a new organization of Catholic NGOs that is just being formed.
Do you have any particular areas of concern or main focus now?
I just returned with my Secretary General from a visit to Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. And that was a visit to see what our programs were doing and what gaps there still are in terms of the migration situation. And the most alarming part of the aftermath of the Iraqi war is the issue of the minorities that have been forced to flee. And it's not only Christians, but it is all sorts of other sects and people who are not Christian. But the plight of Christians is particularly imperative to be looked at and dealt with, because the Holy Father, as the war was about to happen, John Paul II, was very clear that he was worried about the complete downfall of Christianity and the extinction of Christianity in the Middle East, and in particular in Iraq. And unfortunately, that prophecy seems to be being fulfilled. There was an estimate that there were about 1,200,000 Christians in Iraq before the war, and now the estimate is 400,000. So a full three-quarters of the people have fled. And the most recent, very troubling development within the last couple of months was that there was a change in the Iraqi constitution, and for reasons which are not exactly clear, they removed the protection of minorities. There was an Article 50 in the constitution, and they removed that article, and that seemed to be used as a license by extremists in Iraq to seek out Christians.
One of the most moving stories, John said, was told to him by a mother and her daughter.
The daughter was actually working in a Iraqi ministry around Mosul, and she received a phone call on her cell phone. It was an anonymous caller saying, "We know that you're a Christian, and if you do not leave within the hour, you will be murdered." So she immediately left, said goodbye to her fellow workers who were Muslims. And I said, "By the way, how did they react?" And she said, "We were all crying." And I went to my house and threw some things in my suitcase. And we were fortunate because we had visas and we were able to leave. But many of my friends, she said, were unable to leave. And so many of them are living in multiple families in one house in order that when a person has to go out to get food, it's only one person for several families because that person might not come back.
Apart from that situation in the Middle East, what are some other areas? I mean, there's so many, the DRC, even Myanmar, places like that. What are some other areas of significant concern at this point in time for ICMC?
One of the other issues that we are very, very focused on is that of human trafficking. One thinks that after the Civil War in the United States and after the 1850s in Great Britain, that slavery is finished and gone. But unfortunately, slavery is alive, and I don't know if you can call it well, but it's certainly alive. And it's demonstrated in the fact that there are 27 estimated million people and a large, large, large number of women and children who are the victims of trafficking. And that can be all the way from made into sexual slaves, made into prostitutes, or even simply being used and abused.
For instance, John said he was interviewing women in Hong Kong recently, and the women spoke of the fact that in order to get a job overseas, they are requested to pay in advance one-third of their two-year salary, which inevitably leads them to borrow sums of money that plunge them into debt from the very beginning.
And so these poor women are leaving home, going overseas, and automatically they are in debt. And then many of them face an issue when they get to their job that their passport is taken away by their employer. They're often beaten. They are often, very often, raped. They are not given their salaries. When I was in Lebanon a couple weeks ago, we sat and listened to the plight of this one girl who had just come in. I mean, a girl, she was, I guess, in her 30s, and she looked like she was probably 50 because she said, "Every week my employers would beat me three or four times a week. It was both the woman and the man that would beat her." And she said, "And I don't know why they would beat me because I tried to do everything right." And she said, "And I didn't realize that the person that worked there before me had actually jumped out of the window and committed suicide."
That's really tragic. How does the church work in to counter this problem, or how do you counter this issue?
For instance, in Lebanon, we have a safe house, and that is an extraordinary refuge for these women. And this woman, it's the first time she has been safe in 4 years. I mean, there's stories of being electrocuted, being burned by irons, it's just abominable. And so the several ways that it is imperative, in my view, to counter not only the actual, to try to bring these women into a refuge, but to stop the predators from getting at them. So one of the things that we are developing is some system whereby we can try to identify brokers who are reputable, and perhaps it might even be church agencies in some cases, where they would be able to identify potential jobs for women overseas wherein they will not have to face that. And also to develop systems whereby they will have a pension, that they will have some medical health care program, and that they will have some way of savings.
A very interesting program, John said, is conducted by the Good Shepherd Sisters in the Philippines, wherein they do a pastoral with the families of the women who are going over.
To teach them what the dangers are and to make sure that they realize and recognize the dangers and to be alert for them, but also that they do not become too materialistic themselves, that is the families. Because you can imagine the poor woman, if she's working overseas and her family is saying, well, gee, you know, that television we bought is nice, but really the people next door have a bigger one. And couldn't you send more money? And, you know, she's alone, she's without her family, and she's working as much as she possibly can, saving as much as she possibly can, but yet to have that extra pressure would just be devastating.
Ideally, he says, it would be important to have educational programs also for the employer families.
To try to sensitize them to the issues. Mind you, some of the people are simply evil. I mean, anybody who burns or tries to electrocute a woman should be locked in jail and the key thrown away. But it's an issue that so many people are unaware of. And I was recently at a conference, and this professor was talking about the fact that he is an expert on human trafficking, and yet he was bowled over when he read in the Chronicle, he lives in San Francisco, that the restaurant where he eats at least once a week, all of the women who waited on him were actually trafficked women, and he didn't pick up on it. So people you see every day might be in total jeopardy and danger and afraid to talk to anyone.
John says the ICMC is also involved in setting up projects for police and military personnel to train them to look for the telltale signs of women or anyone being trafficked.
What is your goal for 2009, for the year ahead?
We have just had a reconstituted board, and the reason I'm in Rome is because we had our governing committee, and we were lucky enough to have elections of some extraordinary and eminent people, and there's now four cardinals and a patriarch who are members of our board, Cardinal Schoenborn, the Archbishop of Vienna, Cardinal Pell, the Archbishop of Sydney, Cardinal Oscar Andres Rodriguez Maradiaga, the Archbishop of Tegucigalpa in Honduras, who's also the President of Caritas Internationalis, and Cardinal Njue of the Archbishop of Nairobi, as well as the Greek Melkite Patriarch Gregorius III of Damascus. And so with that sort of expression of concern on the part of the Church being particularly focused on this in all regions of the world, our goal is to really spread the message amongst all of the Church to ensure that all bishops' conferences are made aware of this, of the various needs for migration concern. And our members are all of the bishops' conferences of the world. And that is an extraordinary network. And it spreads to every part of the globe and is a testament to Christ's concern for the poor.
You've been listening to John Klink, President of the International Catholic Migration Commission, speaking to Irene Lagan.